you said you speak to the remnant, and no matter how bad things get, there is always a remnant of people who understand what's going on and who find each other, which I love, and I think is true. But you said it's not just a political or practical consideration for you, it's also a spiritual principle for you. What did you mean by
that? Well, I think my spiritual beliefs, which I don't carry on a sleeve.
I know, but I know they're sincere.
I think that that's the same principle, you know, the non-aggression principle.
Yeah.
I think more Christians should know about non-aggression.
I agree with that.
How about people in Congress? How about what is personally annoying to me are the ones who speak well, are dedicated to the Constitution and freedom and peace, and they go on, and yet they're the biggest warmongers ever. They've never voted a nickel against the military and complex, but they still call themselves conservative, constitutionalists. Well, the left does that all the
time. And Christians, they call themselves Christians.
Oh, yeah, they just take that as automatic, too, you know. But yes, they would.
And, so you don't see cluster bombs as a Christian principle?
I see everything that leads up to even thinking about a cluster bomb as not Christian.
Ladies and gentlemen, now it's Too Late with Alan Mosley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Ron Paul.
Ron Paul.
Yeah, well, Ron Paul's back on the show. He's back on somebody's show. He's not back on this show. Are you kidding me?
No.
Come on. Yeah. One's enough. Guys, welcome back for another episode of It's Too Late. I am your host, Alan Mosley, joined as always by the number one producer in late night. It's Dave Wilimowski. Dave, how are you doing?
Doing pretty good. I'm working a lot less, so
yeah,
I have to deal with that. But yeah, I'm hanging in there.
You know, most people, when they're afforded the opportunity to work less, their response isn't having to deal with it. It's yes, I have to work less. But not you, Dave.
No. I'm trying to feed a family.
That, you know what, they could do with less.
That's what I keep telling them, but you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking of doing with less, everyone's going to have to start saving their. If you're not already saving your money, folks, you got to start saving it right now. Because you got to get ready for the 6th annual It's Too Late live show coming to you Saturday, May 18th here in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee.
Beautiful.
Actually, we just sold some tickets to some good friends of ours, and they were looking up accommodations, and it's starting to look pretty tight. Running out of space. I mean, here we are. What is it, March 20th? So it's, oh my God, it's less than 2 months away.
Did you start getting ready yet?
Oh no, all the stuff I've been saying is bull. I don't even have a location. Me and Blake haven't talked in years. Yeah, it's wild. I'm just kidding.
I'm sure he'll be down with it, though.
Yeah, no, look, everybody knows y'all just come for ponchos. Y'all don't actually come for, yeah. The event, if you think about it, in a way, the event happens, and then the event just happens again the next day.
Yeah, and then again.
And yeah, then it happens again the following morning. That's right.
Yeah.
It's just the same event. We actually do, we'll just run the show, we'll run it Friday night, and then we'll run it again on Saturday. Yeah. Live, we won't run
do
a taping.
Better. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. That way, people can see all the work you and I. No, we don't. Yeah, we don't rehearse this show at all. So anyway, that's the 6th annual It's Too Late live show, Saturday, May 18th. The links are over there in chat. They're down in the show notes. You got to get your tickets. Consider getting the Super VIP ticket.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I happen to have it on good authority that if you get the Super VIP ticket, we will appreciate it.
Oh, I will. I know I will.
Yeah. You seem like an appreciative person.
Yeah. I don't know why. I will.
Oh, you're gonna appreciate them, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay.
Well, they'll know.
In national news tonight, the FBI is asking citizens for help identifying these, quote, little rascals scene right here, who robbed a Wells Fargo bank in Houston, Texas last week. Check those little guys out. The suspects, yeah, that's their words, not mine, appearing to be between middle school and early high school age kids, are still at large at the time of this taping. You know, but for many, the takeaway from the story is the ineptitude of the authorities. They've been the target of laughter and ridicule for failing to apprehend child robbers for almost a week running. But, you know, I think the real takeaway here is this. If 14-year-olds can rob a bank and evade the FBI, then you, my friends, can become forklift certified.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a law. You got to be certified. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is making waves this week with in an attempt to dig at President Joe Biden. The former president actually said this on Truth Social. He said, quote, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?"
Oh, wow.
Now, the unfortunate thing for former President Trump is that when he made that, I don't know, they don't call it a tweet. Or what do they call it? Truths? What do they call it? I don't even know. I'm not a cultist retard. But when he made that statement over there on Truth Social, unfortunately for him, he made it on the 4-year anniversary of 15 Days to Stop the Spread.
Oh.
On the 4-year anniversary of the national lockdowns that would lead 15 days would become months of lockdown and years of hardship for millions of Americans, not to mention the handing over of the handling of the pandemic to swamp monsters like Dr. Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx, and others who used the crisis to target political dissenters, small businesses, churches, and more. So I thought that, Dave, that would be an interesting question for you and I. So your former president asked you, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?
Yeah, no.
You're not?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not better off. I mean,
I'm actually
all the handouts and stuff.
Well, no, that's weird to me because I'm significantly better off, Dave, than 4 years ago. Because 4 years ago, the country was locked down.
When it started.
The businesses were all shut down. And so you couldn't go to work and you couldn't pay your bills and you lost everything. And you had to start over. Yeah, no, I'm a lot better than I was 4 years ago.
And I had to drive to New York to get alcohol.
Oh, that's wait. Okay, hold on. What?
Yeah. Yeah, I had to go across the state line because they shut down all the state stores here.
Did I know about this?
I don't know. I spent a lot of money, though. But I found out that I shouldn't have that much alcohol on hand at one time. That's no good.
This whole bit. So first of all, you totally destroyed the bit with your answer, by the way, because you don't read the notes. But
no,
this actually kills me because you lost just as much, if not more, money than me, but it's because you were running alcohol like a shiner back in the 20s.
I guess I was, yeah.
And after, not before, not during, but after losing all the money, you decided maybe the real problem is the alcohol.
Yeah, it could have been. I think that was a turn.
That's classic Dave right there. Bootleg Dave. They're already calling you that in chat. Yeah. So no, actually, you know, the thing is I'm actually way better off today than I was 4 years ago. But that's thanks largely to our hard work to overcome his malfeasance.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I happened to see right before we started the show, somebody was sharing an advertisement from Taco Bell. And the advertisement was from 2010. 2010 is not like prehistoric. 2010 was yesterday. Yeah, I remember. I know you don't remember, but I remember 2010. I know you don't remember 2022, but I remember 2010. And the advertisement was for the beefy five-layer burrito, brand new. You and I had some beefy five-layer burritos on our Taco Bell tier list. Yeah. That's actually one of my staple go-tos, and it is because it used to be the thing I would always get off the menu because it was like a value item. It's like, oh, I don't really want to get a combo. Just give me a couple of five-layer beefy burritos. Yeah. When it came out, it was on the value menu for 89 cents.
No.
I looked this up on their app right now. It's $5.39.
That's not a good sign.
Oh, it's 5:39. And it got me to thinking, this is what's going to happen. I'm not sure there's going to be any presidential debates this year, like in the general between Trump and Biden, because Biden's hiding in a clinic at this point. And yeah. And Trump's just going to scream at the camera. So I'm not sure there would be a debate. But if there was a debate, you know that both of these geezers are going to roll out there and blame each other for the price of a beefy five-layer burrito. And this would be one of the few times that they're both right.
Yep.
They are both to blame completely for this situation. But I'll tell you who's not to blame. Since, you know what, my favorite octogenarian is better than your favorite octogenarian. You guys, if you caught the cold open to this show, you saw a little segment from Tucker Carlson's latest show where he had an interview with former Congressman Ron Paul, the best president we never had. You know, Ron Paul is 88 years old. Ron Paul's 88 years old.
Damn.
And that conversation with Carlson is far beyond anything that Biden or Trump could muster. I've seen both of those guys talk recently. Like, I mean, goodness knows, we know Biden's brain is jello, but frankly, Trump embarrasses himself every time he speaks too. America would be a far more prosperous nation today had it listened to him. And also, by the way, far more people would not have lost their lives overseas.
Amen.
Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, you know, of course you're going to. I think you're a little bit biased, Alan. And all I can say is, you know what? You're right. What can I say? I'm a little bit biased when it comes to Dr. Paul. Yeah. Remember that? Yeah.
Those were the days. I remember
those
that.
Those were the days. I asked that man if a hot dog was a sandwich. Yeah. No, look at him. Look how happy he is. It's right. That's how every guest looks when they're on.
Yeah, it's a wonderful show.
Yeah. Guys, let me tell you about one of tonight's sponsors, which is Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. If you use promo code ITL, you get 18% off orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders of $37.99 or more. Visit them online at foxandsons.com. I've actually got a bag of Fox & Sons right here. This is the Fox & Sons Den Blend 2 Electric Boogaloo. Did you see that all the new flavors he's got?
I can't keep up.
Yeah, there's so many. The last one I saw is he's got Tanzania.
Oh, that sounds exotic.
Listen to this. It's honey and orange and cherry flavored. It's just pick your poison,
like
folks.
Fruit punch.
It's whichever one you want. Yeah, it's crazy. Steve hates us so much. I know for a fact that the only reason Steve doesn't drop us as a sponsor is because, hey, we're out there slinging them beans.
Somehow it works.
That's right. So anyway, that's Fox & Sons Coffee, which you can find at foxandsons.com. Use promo code. It's too late. What do you think, Dave? Commercial break?
Oh, yeah, we should get moving.
Guys, we're going to be back with the meme of the week in the viewer mail right after this commercial break. Don't go away. You notice people in chat are reminiscing about the price of tacos. You see that?
Oh,
that's ridiculous. Yeah. I
missed dollar menus, man. Remember dollar menus?
I just always got like a McDouble because it was like, I'm getting a double cheeseburger for a dollar. That's great. Yeah. That dude. Just don't start, man. I'm already.
Those days are gone.
I'm already having. Oh, my God. I tore the cookie. I can't even read it. What the heck? Where's the rest of the thing? Oh, oh my god. Slipping. This is all. Oh, I'm slipping.
This is a train wreck now.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's me. You will be fortunate in everything you put your hands to. Well, that's clearly not fucking true, is it? Look at this shit. Sorry for the language, everyone. Oh man. Yeah. All right. Anyway, let me tell you about tonight's other sponsor, which is the Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, which you can find at tnhotsauceco.com. Oh, Steve's here. Shut up, Steve. It's Tennessee Hot Sauce's turn. It's Tennessee Hot Sauce Company. You use promo code, yep. It's too late, for 10% off your entire order.
Ooh.
Including sauces such as this. This is perfect for St. Patrick's Day. Look at that. It's the whiskey habanero.
Oh, there we go.
You seem like somebody that would like the whiskey habanero.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And apparently it's right in the middle when it comes to heat. And the ingredients are vinegar, whiskey, habanero, bell peppers, garlic, lime, chipotle peppers, and salt.
Ooh. Ooh.
How can it be 5 calories? That can't be, you know?
Yeah, there's food in there.
Yeah, like how many whiskeys do you drink that are 5 calories?
No. Yeah.
Yeah, that's BS. So just switch to whiskey habanero.
Oh.
We've cracked the code.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
So anyway, that's Tennessee Hot Sauce Company, tnhotsauceco.com. Use promo code, it's too late. Hey, Dave.
Yes, Alan.
What time is it?
It's time for Meme of the Week.
I don't even remember what I picked.
I didn't get to see it yet.
If you can give us some financial support, okay, please, give us a credit, and we will give you back money.
How has that guy not been assassinated yet, is what I want to know.
Oh.
Dude, this is Eastern Europe. The war's been going on for a while. They're clearly going to lose. Yeah. I'm feeling it. I'm doing the old Johnny Carson, and I'm thinking they're going to drag him out of the palace and blow his brains out pretty soon. It's like we're right on the edge. Hey, but we do have a bonus meme. Check out the bonus meme.
Oh, cool. Wow.
You ever have that? You ever get in the car with somebody and say, hey, you know, hey, put your seatbelt on, and they're like, no, I'm good. But yeah. It's your car. You're making the decisions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll so you just right do there. That. You just
establish dominance.
Just start sweating. Yeah.
Not really. Yeah, that's off-putting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Why is he sweating?
Oh my god. Look, what's Are we doing good on time? Like, you're supposed to be keeping me...
22?
No, it's not. Look at the recording time. Jesus Christ.
Oh, the recording time.
I hate you so much. No, I do. I hate you. You can't even see
it. 22.
Put your readers on.
That's streaming time. Oh, it's 18. Okay, 18,
Oh, my God, Dave. All right. You and me in the after party are going to have a talk. But until then...
You said something about time. Okay.
Yeah. Let's answer the viewer mail. Well, Steve, if you would send me stuff about all your new flavors, maybe we'd sell more coffee. Degenerate. Getting his Tanzania, his cherry, and his orange. All right, anyway, I'm sorry. I got carried away. Steve's triggered me. We got him his fancy emote on Twitch and everything. Mm-hmm. Josh Wright writes, Dear Alan and Dave, who is your favorite stooge?
Oh.
You got a favorite stooge, Dave?
I don't know. I forget who's who. I know it's not Mo because he just seemed kind of a jerk. I think it would be Larry. Is he the one, the kind of goofy one? Well, they're all kind of goofy, but bald
yeah.
one.
Yeah, yeah. Which is the one? Yeah, which one's a lot very stoogey? Yeah.
Which one of the four stooges? That one because he seems to have a good heart. I like that guy.
Yeah. You know what, Dave? I think you're my favorite stooge.
Oh,
yeah. Sweet. We don't have an all button because we've tried.
Yeah, we tried. It's not out there.
Yeah, they're not. They're
we'll
not
do it at the live event. We'll record it at the live event.
Okay.
Yeah. See. All
right. Write that down on the note.
finally showed my worth there.
Okay, yeah, well, we've been waiting a few weeks. All right, Aaron Kinder writes, Dear Alan and Dave, when can we expect another story time with Uncle Alan segment?
Ooh.
I don't think we'll be doing those anymore. So probably next week.
Yeah. Whenever.
Yeah. I mean, I've got some stories from this past weekend, but those aren't really, on air stories. Those are really more.
Yeah. Campfire stories are.
Yeah. Campfire stories.
More intimate. Yeah.
Those are the types of stories you tell around the campfire.
Yeah. Listen up, kids.
Jeez. All right. Well, that is in line with story time with Uncle Alan, I got to admit. Andrew Avery writes, Dear Alan and Dave, would you be mad if you were out for a walk and your hat went on ahead?
If it wasn't mine.
I never wear a hat.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. You wear hats. I'm not a hat person. I mean, I grow my own. I have one.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to mess that up.
Yeah. I saw somebody made a meme where it was like somebody trying to be a Chad, and he was bald, and you know, talking about alpha this and alpha that, and somebody responded with, you know, alpha ? Dude, you don't even have any hair on your head, LOL.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I was like, damn. All right. Keith McQuarrie writes, Dear Alan and Dave, what is the deal with clogs? You been getting a lot of clogs, Dave?
Well, you know, I got two girls in the house, so.
Oh, yeah.
They get a lot of hair. There's always like a ball of hair, like on the edge of the bathtub.
Ugh. Why can't they just throw that away?
Yeah, just throw it away. Take it with you when you
leave. Yeah. You know what?
I understand it falls out.
Yeah. Them not discarding the hair on the side of the tub is like a man leaving the seat up. If they're going to talk about the seat being up, then it's like, yeah, please discard your refuse. It's like medical waste, you know?
It is.
Jesus. All right. I'm not going to lie. I kind of have that problem too. Cause I mean,
I believe you. Yeah.
All right.
Do you clean it out each time?
Well, see, I do. I throw my hair. I don't put it down the drain. Cause then that's how you get a clog.
Yeah. You don't want that.
Yeah. I'm not going to. Dude, if my drain clogs, I have to move. I will leave this. Yeah. I won't tell. All right. Keith McQuarrie writes. No, that's what he already wrote. Mary Lynn Willimowski writes, Dear Alan and Dave.
Uh-oh.
Do you ever hit your head or any body part on something and then punch and or curse at the object you banged into? I did that right before the show started.
Yeah.
So I punched the doorway in there with my left hand coming back into the studio on accident. And now I'm going to do it on purpose.
You have to.
I have a bit of a temper. I have got some anger stuff. Yeah, I know. Like I hide it really well, but.
Yeah.
You know, I know sometimes when you switch the camera off of me and onto you and everyone's like, oh, look, it's Dave. Like, you know, so, I mean, God forbid you, like, I'm literally emoting for you what to do. So I'll just do it myself.
Yeah,
and then I'm just over here. Yeah. And then, yeah, if you were to switch the camera back really fast, you would see me just like that, you know.
Crushing it down.
Yeah, I would. That is what a man does.
Yes.
You just.
Crush it down.
And forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And one day, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, who knows? You will unleash that upon your significant other.
Yeah, usually a family member.
Yeah. All right. Hope this helps, Mary. Brian Johnson writes, Dear Alan and Dave, have you ever made a prank call to someone you don't know? Dave, did you ever do prank calls?
I know I did because I grew up in a time before everybody had caller ID or cell phones. So you could actually just call a number and they would have no idea. And they would answer. Like you'd have no idea who's calling and they'd answer the phone.
Yeah.
And what did we do? I'm sure we tried to do the refrigerator. Is your refrigerator running or something stupid like that?
Yeah.
It wasn't that fun.
I'll tell you the next level Chad thing is, so I grew up in a time when people were first starting to get caller ID And we would call people that had caller ID and do it anyway.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's some alpha shit.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. You want to talk about establishing dominance. You call somebody where they can see it's you. And when they say, yeah, man, what's up? Is you say, you know, something like, you know, your wife's fucking dead. And then hang up the phone.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, ah, got him. Got him. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, I mean, you laughed, so there you go.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, see that, Mary? Dave thinks that's hilarious. All right. Are we doing good on time still?
Yeah.
If I lean over during the commercial break and we're not doing good on time, that's...
See, but I forget what good is. I think we're good.
Okay, all right. Well, guys, we're going to be back with legendary libertarian muckraker Jim Bovard right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
Here they come down the hill. It looks like Ruben is in the lead, and here comes Al. Oh, that was a bad idea. At Riverside Park, Rob Black, Global News.
Come on, shake the leggin' hands, come on.
Oh, who is she? A misty memory.
Good morning, everyone. I hate Nick.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Our guest this evening, making his third appearance ever on the show, but first one since 2019, which, Jim, I know nothing of note has happened since you were last on the show. It's been smooth sailing in the good old US of A. But he's here to talk about his latest book, right? I've got right here is Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty. That's an awfully ominous title to kick things off with. And I also want to point out, look at these fantastic photographs, both on the front and the back of the book right there, which just do a little bit to set the tone. I'll go ahead and start off right there. Jim Bovard, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Alan, thanks for having me, and thanks for liking those photographs. I had fun taking those shots, especially the one in the back where I'm basically jamming the camera lens and this line of SWAT cops lined up in front of the distant U.S. Capitol in the background. Is like, you know, nice way to spend a Saturday afternoon in the district area.
Well, I know being a legendary libertarian muckraker at like yourself, you've got the 2021 on the photo in the back. I'm assuming the front one's probably taken around the same time. But as a quick aside before we dive into the meat of the book here, so the front's got the razor wire, the back's got the line of the SWAT police. Can you think of another time in your time moseying around D.C. that you can remember a sight quite like that?
I can't recall it quite like that. There were some riots and stuff like that. But I mean, it's part of what was fascinating about that barbed wire photo. I was on a hike in March 2021, and you know, I had my camera, I was playing around, and I was saying, you know, it was kind of cloudy, and then the sun popped out a little bit, and then voila, you know, I got a decent shot. I was trying to catch the sun on the barbed wire. They, you know, they had like 10,000, 15,000 National Guard troops around the U.S. Capitol was fenced off to keep peasants away. And it was fascinating that there was no controversy about the military occupation of Washington, D.C.
Sure.
You had all these troops, all these armored vehicles, all this, all that. And it was this like, yeah, well, that's how it's supposed to be. And it's funny because there's the old line about whether freedom dies with a whimper. And it's like, you know, there was people in D.C. were fine with it. Most of the folks who I talked to now, you know, there's some kindred spirits that had a surly attitude like I did. But it was just amazing how uncontroversial military occupation was.
Well, it's definitely strikes a certain image, but I if I had to take a guess, Jim, I would say that a lot of Americans don't see D.C. as part of America, if that makes a weird sort of sense. Is that so? When I think of the United States, I don't think of Washington, D.C., because that's not us, that's them. And so to see them surrounded by their troops doesn't really surprise me at all.
So is this tied, since you're from Tennessee, is this tied to your 1860s perspective?
Well, you know, I do tell people you can't slander me by calling me a neo-Confederate, because I don't use the neo part when I'm describing myself. But hold on, this isn't about me. This is about you, Jim. So let me transition here. So Last Rites, The Death of American Liberty, which came out at the end of 2023, which is, of course, a play on words. But you also wrote a book, Lost Rights, The Death of American Liberty, that was back in 1995. And I'm not going to get on your case that I was only 10 years old when that book came out. But from 1995 to 2023, would you say, you want to talk about the softest of softballs, would you say that things this have evolved for the better?
This is going to be like, oh, this is going to be a real knee breaker. Go ahead.
Would you say that you had nothing but glowing reviews about how liberty has improved in those number of years, or the opposite?
Well, there's a lot more federal agencies that put me on their enemies list.
Oh,
I mean, it was after Lost Rights came out that FBI Chief Louis Freed denounced me. And I guess there's about a dozen different federal agency chiefs that have denounced my work over the years, publicly denounced. And privately is another matter. The Justice Department was covertly emailing USA Today to get my columns there, my op-eds there canceled. So that was always good for morale.
It's nice to be recognized.
Well, you know, it's just sad I couldn't boost my speaking fees because of that. So, it's sad to look back to the 1990s, and, you know, it was practically a golden age of freedom compared to nowadays. There were so many sea changes after 9/11, so many federal agencies that were taken off the leash, and, you know, not to mention the worldwide torture regime. And then you had the Supreme Court basically absolving all the torturers, but we still have the rule of law because the Justice Department still has that that saying over its entrance, equal justice under the law, or maybe it's buy low, sell high. I don't know what it says.
Well, you have this particular zinger here, because I clicked on the link that you sent me that had your personal choice of zingers that you're hoping take off just as much as two wolves and a sheep voting. And right off the bat, you have Americans today have the freedom to be fleeced, groped, wiretapped, censored, injected, disarmed, beaten, vilified, detained, and maybe shot by government agents. Oh, now come on. It can't be that bad, Jim.
Well, I said maybe.
This is true. It's not a guarantee.
No, I mean, it's an interesting thing. You just go, you know, that's the first sentence of the book, actually. And I was trying to get a way to vividly capture the sweep of federal power. And the thing about injected, well, you had Biden's vaccine mandates. You had, you've got so much surveillance going on. You've got so many people have been, you go to the airport and especially for people who watch this program online, and, you know, that's part of their federal dossier, TSA is going to give you hell.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because you pack so much into the number of pages that you have in the book. It's by the way, I did look it up. I think there's 25 less pages on Last Rites than there is Lost Rites. So apparently we lost so many rites that we lost a chapter of the book. But that being neither here nor there, you do have a whole section talking about guns, Second Amendment, firearms. And I wanted to make sure that we touched on that for a while, because one of the things that I noticed on Twitter that kind of sparked that idea in my head of, oh, I got to have Jim Bovard back on, was you are someone in particular that is not allowing the memory of Duncan Lemp to die. And I appreciate you for doing that, because you know how the news cycle is, Jim. It's, you know, it's harumph harumph for 24 hours and then we're on to the next outrage. And I know that in Lost Rites, of course, that being coming out in 1995, you know, you have some fresh material in there about the Waco siege. And then now here we are fast forwarding to Last Rites, and here we are talking about Duncan Lemp. So, I, you know, what's old is new again, of course. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Duncan Lemp was a libertarian leaning pro-gun activist. He was 21 years old. He was, he'd been outspoken online. He had posted photos of him and his guns online, which the government misidentified. But one of the photos he had on Instagram was a photo of his a rifle, and he pegged it to his hometown. And then he had a line in there, something to the effect that green armor-piercing bullets gets the girls wet. And this is a phrase that the local police used to help get a no-knock warrant to raid his house. And so on the day after they got the warrant, 4:42 a.m., you got two teams of police coming up, SWAT teams. One smashes in the front door of the house where Lemp lived, in a very affluent area, Potomac, Maryland. It's about 5 or 6 miles from where I live. It's a whole lot more affluent than here. But so you got one team of police going in the front door with the battering ram. And then you had two other cops who went around to the bedroom where they knew the Lemp was sleeping next to his pregnant girlfriend. And the cops did what they call a break and rake. And so you had one cop with a fireman's pike who smashes in the bedroom window and then pulls back the curtains. And then the other cop steps up with his rifle. Before that, the cops threw in two flashbang grenades to, disorient people and leave them completely confused. Then the cops shot Lemp three times, without warning, basically. So Lemp is laying there on the floor, bleeding profusely. His eyes are open. He's looking terrified. And instead of giving first aid, one of the cops comes up and puts his boot on Lemp's throat. Lemp died a few minutes later.
Well, there's so much in that story, and I know that a lot of people covered it at the time, but like I said, unfortunately, things tend to be forgotten when new outrages come along. Now this happened in the state of Maryland. I don't know, because I don't have our friends at the 10th Amendment Center's website up right now, because they do dedicate a fair amount of coverage to legislation being passed on the state level against no-knock warrants. I don't know if anything on that front has been done in Maryland since Duncan Lemp was killed. I know that a number of states have, but one thing I'd like to ask you about is if the legions of our fans on Twitter, and you'll know the ones I'm talking about, are of any indication, it's that if somebody disagrees with someone's politics, then suddenly they don't care if their neck is under the boot of an officer that just gunned them down in their own home. Whereas if it were somebody whose politics they do agree with, or someone who demographically looks or acts more like them, then suddenly there's a lot of sympathy. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that some necessarily deserve less sympathy than others. What I'm saying is that we should sympathize with everyone who finds themselves running afoul of the state. Right off the top of my head, I remember the whole situation with Breonna Taylor, and there was a lot of pushback on what had happened when she was killed. But a lot of the same people who were upset about Breonna Taylor were not sharing that same level of passion for Duncan Lemp. And I find that incredibly tragic.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're going to stick with euphemisms today.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to try my best.
It was amazing to be, I was amazed at how little interest there was in the Lemp case. There was the Washington Post acted like, well, there was a vilification of Lemp. He was painted as a radical, as an extremist, as a violent extremist, somebody with dangerous ideas. There were a lot of people that were kind of saying, well, you know, someone with those kind of ideas, and he was a gun owner, you know, and we know he was a gun owner. And it's to see how easily so many people shrugged off this pre-dawn killing in a no-knock raid by someone who had not done any violence, who was not making any violent threats, and who was wrongly accused of having an illegal assault weapon, which he did not have. And the state attorney's office issued a report 7-8 months later and said, well, it turns out on further examination that the rifle he had we thought was illegal, turns out it was legal, but, you know, never mind, no loss. And it was treated like a paperwork error when you use that to smash in a window and gun somebody down before dawn. I'm just amazed at the lack of interest in this case. And, you know, I had a lot of strikeouts with this when I was submitting articles on it. A lot of places, you know, Irish need not apply. And some of the places, well, I'll try and be polite here, but it was amazing to see. I mean, this is done just outside, handful of miles from the nation's capital. National media centered here, and it's just like, you know, all that mattered was that Lemp had supposedly had bad ideas and he owned guns, and, you know, so the government gets the benefit of the doubt. This is part of the reason so many people distrust both the media and the government, because you get a case like this and you have zero liability for the police, and this is something that the local politicians never commented on. But as soon as George Floyd was killed up in Minneapolis, a number of the county council members spoke out, well, this is terrible and it's an outrage. You know, they had, but they totally ignored the Montgomery County Police under their own jurisdiction, basically because some killings don't count. So,
well, I know that you use the phrase, make sure I'm getting this right, impunity democracy, right? That's the phrase that you use. That since these officials, you know, you talk about in Lemp's case that, oh, you know, 7-8 months later, they're going to say, oh, well, you know, perhaps we got some of the facts scrambled, but hey, what's done is done, right? You can't, no point in crying over spilt milk. But since these people ultimately really don't suffer any consequences for their actions, it's hard to imagine that things like this won't continue to happen.
Yes, that's putting it very nicely, Alan.
Yeah, I'm doing really good here. I'm trying to watch my language. This is a family program after all, Jim.
You're trying to sound so reasonable. It's been a long time since I was on your show, and you really changed the tone. My God, there was a line that Mercedes Lemp, Duncan Lemp's mother, said to me about a year after her son was killed. She said that she had the impression that the police never intended to arrest him, that they were planning to kill him from the start. And it was unfortunate that for the county police, it was easier to shoot Lemp than to talk to him, because it would have been easy to, stop him and question him and say, okay, there's a search warrant we have for your house. They didn't do that. They just, you know, smashed in the window and started shooting, and they got away with it so far.
Well, to kind of put a final note on that before we take a commercial break is that I think this is also one of many examples that you could cite where, you know, we live in such a binary left, right, black and white society where if you're against things like that, what happened to Duncan Lemp or Breonna Taylor, then there are elements that would say, oh, well, you're soft on crime. You're anti-police. That means, oh, you want to defund the police. You know, all of a sudden we're going to have spikes in crime, and vice versa. If you are a, you know, thin blue line supporter, then it's, oh, well, the police, of course, you know, thank you for your service. And, you know, everyone needs to be stopped and frisked on every street corner. And of course, obviously there's, what's unfortunate about that, there's no room in the middle, right? You know, if you were to listen to these talking heads in the media, then you would think that those are the only two positions you can have. It's wipe out all policing in America or Nazi Germany. There's just nowhere in the middle. Whereas I think the more sensible position would be to say that, well, it is desirable to have safe communities, but you know, obviously, just having nothing more than having, you know, security forces being culpable for their actions. Just that one teeny tiny little change could go a long way. But of course, all of our friends in the police unions and in everywhere else in Washington and further on are not interested in those types of reforms. Or I know a popular one that a lot of people say online is, it's like, well, let's just allow people, let's get rid of qualified immunity, right? Let's allow people to sue in cases like this, and let's tie the police pension fund to these lawsuits rather than, you know, the city's coffers. Doesn't seem to be a lot of traction for those things in D.C.
No, it's surprising that there hasn't been something as simple as getting rid of qualified immunity, which is basically a totally perverse doctrine that the Supreme Court pulled out of its backside, that basically gives police a license to kill, among other laws that have been perversely interpreted. I think getting rid of qualified immunity would help. It would not be a panacea. But to see how prosecutors can simply absolve police and with a half-ass or no investigation when there's a dubious killing, I mean, this is appalling. And this has been going on a long time. It's funny. I was talking with someone recently, and they were talking about, well, these no-knock raids, they're, you know, I hadn't heard about them before. I said, well, shit, I wrote about that for Playboy 30 years ago. And it's like, you know, it's been an outrage for a long time. It's gotten worse. But I'm supposed to have a positive spin here. I don't.
No, that's all right. Well, we've got the whole next segment to come up with our positive spin. So speaking of pulling it out of our backsides, we're going to be back with more from Jim Bovard right after this commercial break. Don't go away. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley is proudly supported by Fox & Sons Coffee. Fans of It's Too Late use code ITL and receive 18% off orders of $25 or more. Shipping's always free on orders over $37.99. So get yours today at their website, which is www.foxandsons.com. It's www.foxandsons.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are joined once again by our friend Jim Bovard, whose latest book right here, Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty. Now, Jim, I know that you have an extensive section on censorship, which I think is a particularly good section for you, because I failed to mention this in your introduction. I think it would be easier to list places that you haven't had an article published rather than places that you have been published. So for a guy that has had his works in pages all over America and in tons and tons of huge outlets that I know the audience would recognize, on the censorship front, we'll start with just you personally. Now, I know in that last segment you had mentioned, hey, I'm writing, you know, the killing of Duncan Limp is something that I'm passionate about. I think this is something people should hear about, but you're not getting a lot of takers. But not just that topic specifically, but for any topic, would you say that is a problem that you've run into more and more often more recently than you would have, say, 20, 30 years ago?
You know, that's a coin toss. I mean, the American media has become more cowardly and more deferential to government. You know, back when I was first starting out, there were a number of newspapers I'd write for that really enjoyed how my articles would get people riled up. They had all these angry phone calls, all these outraged letters to the editor. It's like, yeah, you know, you know, they have my stuff on their pages and, you know, the phone lines light up. At some point, maybe in the mid, late 90s, especially after 9/11, the appetite for controversy greatly decreased. I think a lot of papers and there were, you know, there were even to something as simple as being having a federal agency attempt to attack an article. I mean, there was a time where editors viewed that as catnip. And whereas in recent times, some editors feel like, damn, what did we do wrong? And I'm thinking, what the hell did journalism schools do wrong? But it's interesting on the censorship stuff. I mean, there's been a sea change among the media in that they've been, they've rolled over for so much federal censorship. If you see how the most of the media covered the COVID-19 pandemic, the lockdowns, the vaccine mandates, the school shutdowns, all the mask mandates and stuff like that. It was almost as if the media felt like that they had been conscripted to be cheerleaders for any government dictate, no matter how idiotic it proved to be.
Well, it's funny. So literally, as we're sitting here having this conversation this week, the diversity hire in the Supreme Court made comments this week that I see you grinning, so you're probably aware of, where she had said in regards to the First Amendment that she believed that the First Amendment should be reworked or at least reevaluated because it, quote, hamstrings what the government is able to do. Now, she said those words unironically as, well, how could this be? This can't be right. Imagine that. And, you know, something in the Bill of Rights would hamstring the government, and that would confound a Supreme Court justice.
Well, but, you know, you have to give her credit because she explained that the government needs to have some type of ability to censor social media because, for instance, as she said, there might be a national epidemic of teenagers jumping out of windows, jumping out of high windows and hurting themselves or killing themselves. And so the federal government needs to be able to censor the social media to stop all the teenagers from jumping out of windows. Well, you think I'm joking, don't you?
No, I
joking, don't you?
Yeah. I can only read so much into what these people say and do before I have to shut it out. So you'll probably know more than me. But speaking of social media, it's a brave new world out there right now. We didn't have when Lost Rights came out. You know, we didn't have Facebook and Twitter or X, excuse me, to our X/Twitter friends or TikTok.
Yeah, folks read books back then. Yeah. Folks read books back then. It was long ago.
Well, so what is your opinion on that then? I know that this is kind of a broad little bit of a segue here, but I think a lot of it from a legalese standpoint, and I'm not a blood-sucking lawyer, so forgive me, but from a legalese standpoint, it's how do we handle, and of course, when I say we, I'm talking about the lizard people. How do the lizard people handle social media? Because are these just communication platforms, or are these publishers? Should they fall under certain legal restrictions the way, you know, do we treat Facebook or Twitter the way we would treat the New York Times? How do you weigh in on that? Or do you think that that's just a lot of bluster for we don't like the ones that don't parrot the regime narrative and we do like the ones that do?
That's the question we're tying to Section 230, a federal provision that gives immunity pretty much to social media for the stuff that's posted there by third parties. I think that's a fair assessment. And what the Biden folks were doing was forcing Twitter and Facebook to kowtow by threatening to pull that Section 230 immunity that would make them liable for anything that anybody posted, which would basically guarantee them being financially destroyed. I don't know what the perfect legal structure is for this. I think some of the status quo is good because it means that people, for instance, I can go on Twitter. And so there was a I had some fun yesterday with that comment from Justice Jackson on that she was worried that the First Amendment could hamstring the federal government. So I quoted that and said, "Oh Lordy!" And someone replied, "You Nazi pile, steaming pile of shit." So, and I was thinking, is that defamation? No, maybe it's accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, you know, folks mouth off and it's like, it's fine. I mean, it's just, I've seen a lot of defamation of me online by kind of casual comments like that, but it's like, this is how the game is played these days. And you need a thick skin and you need to also be able to mock folks who say something really stupid, because the thing I did with that comment is bracketed and said that Justice Jackson has finally found a worthy defender.
Well, on that note, I happened to catch your appearance on the Tom Woods Show a few months back. One of the topics that you guys got into, beyond just talking about tons of bureaucracy and alphabet agencies and all that, and I thought about this just now when you were talking about being the victim of defamation, is you have all of these regulations that then in turn spawn literally hundreds of thousands or millions of lawsuits. One of the questions that was just rattling around in my head while I was listening to you and Tom talk was, it seems that the perverse incentive here is, or to put another way, this is why we can't have nice things, is that, of course, you know, you or I would think, well, I'm not going to call my lawyer because somebody called me a bad word, or what were the examples that you had talked about? Oh, the coat rack is a few inches too high, I can't reach it, or what have you. But unfortunately, we live in a society where a lot of people would, in fact, take advantage of those types of regulations in order to file suits against people. Do we live in a lawsuit happy world, Jim?
Yeah, there is. I'm sad to say that may be the case. One of my favorite examples, you mentioned the flood of lawsuits. The Americans with Disabilities Act is so broad and vague, it's generated over 500,000 lawsuits. One of my favorite examples was there was a deaf guy who sued Pornhub for violating his rights because most of the videos on Pornhub do not have closed captions. So it's really hard to understand what's going on, you know, unless you get that dialogue. I mean, a lot of that dialogue is Shakespearean, you know. People just have to, you know, give
them credit. We only watch it for the plot. Absolutely.
There you go.
Oh, my goodness.
True story. True story.
Well, a great example to use. But, I think, you know, obviously, beyond just the obvious problem that those things shouldn't exist at all, is the fact that, you know, we know that federal bureaucracies, they don't really, like in the case of, you know, the ADA, American Disabilities, I'm not so sure that anyone at the federal government is really here to help. I know that comes as a shock to the audience, but I'm afraid that they don't actually care about Americans with disabilities at all, but rather they are justifying their own existence.
Well, I think some of them do care and some of them do try to help, but federal agencies tend to like expansive regulations. And a huge trouble you have with the Disabilities Act is it's basically glommed on to the psychiatrist DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, with all these new definitions of mental illnesses. So at this point, you've got like 20 or 30% of college students claiming to have some type of mental or emotional disability, so they don't have to take the test, or they get twice as long to take the test, or they get to take the test home and work on it. And you have all these advantages that are being given. And it's also unfortunate because what that law has done, it's turned disabilities into legal assets. And it's a very perverse incentive. Having said that, there are some people who need help. Some people are bona fide handicapped. But, I mean, you've had so many, nonsensical claims that it muddies the water.
Well, speaking of money being the water, you know, one of the topics we'll wrap up with this one. Of course, the last time you were on the show was November of 2019. And so it was a few months after that that there was, of course, this unknown virus of unspecified origins that viciously attacked the Western world. In fact, we had our episode 100. We do an annual event, and we had one for episode 100, and it was in March. It was in March of 2020, and we had people flying in from all over the country. You know, it was a super spreader event before they had invented that terminology. Okay. And then within a week of that event, of course, people were saying, oh, well, it's a good thing I got back out of town when I did, because I don't think I would have been able to get a flight because there's all these shutdowns, all these things going on. And so I think something that has really been brought to the forefront, maybe not right away, but at least in the months and years since, is exactly the money line that you used right there. That, you know, we're led to believe that there's all of these experts and scientists who are all testifying that, oh, yes, this is a threat. These are the countermeasures that should be used. You know, don't worry about whether or not this flies in the face of 100 years of established science. Trust us, we know what we're talking about. And wouldn't you know, funny thing that the doctors and scientists who disagreed were of course vilified and thrown out of their professions. And the ones who did agree not only were celebrated, but 9 times out of 10, you come to find out, well, they're getting their paychecks either directly or from grants via the federal government. That has to just be a coincidence, I'm sure.
Well, you know, it's like there was an old saying, no matter how cynical you get, it's not enough to keep up.
Well, that describes us.
So and that's about the best way to look at federal policy. I mean, especially for the pandemic. I mean, it was interesting living in the D.C. area during that time. Because, you know, something I've always done for many years is go out and hikes on the weekend. So I kept doing that. So I'd be walking on the trails, you know, canal trail, towpath, and there'd be these other folks coming the opposite direction. People would literally start screaming and cussing at me because I wasn't wearing a mask. And so I just simply tell them, hey, tell it to your therapist, you know. I'm sorry you're upset, but we're outside. And by the way, don't get too close. Don't get too close. So,
well, Jim, on that note, I was going to say I'd love to join you for a hike if I'm ever up that way. But I can't imagine why I would ever leave the objectively superior southern part of the U.S. I think instead you should come down to visit us.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I appreciate the invite.
Jim, where can people go to support you and check out more of your content?
Okay, jimbovard.com. I've got a bunch of books on sale on Amazon. And thanks very much for your kind words on last rites. I think people are getting a lot of laughs out of that, as well as, you know, they might need some blood pressure medicine afterwards. I'm doing a lot lately for New York Post. I was on deadline with them this afternoon. So writing about that censorship case, and it's like, oh my, you think it was bad? You don't know half of it.
Well, as they always say, you think you hate these people enough, but you don't. You don't hate them enough. Jim Bovard, thanks for coming back on the show, buddy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Alan.
Guys, we're going to be back to wrap up the show right after this commercial break. Don't go away.
If you're enjoying tonight's show, consider supporting the program by becoming a member of our Patreon. That's over at patreon.com/AlanMosley.
Like our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AlanMosleyTV. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com@AlanMosleyTV. Subscribe to our YouTube page. It's youtube.com/AlanMosleyTV. Also, if you're more of a listener than a watcher, get us on your favorite podcasting platform of choice thanks to Spotify. It's Too Late with Alan Mosley or Alan Mosley TV. Don't forget to get your tickets for the 6th annual It's Too Late live show coming to you Saturday, May 18th in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee.
No.
Dave, do you have a final thought?
I was thinking it's like, is it really worth it to like deliver pizzas or something like that? Is that good money?
You you are in a place where you've got to value your time more than that.
This place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's got to get their tickets and subscribe. And because Alan said after $1 million, I can start getting paid.
Yeah.
Pretty excited about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I know it sounds deceptive, but see, Dave is a long-term thinker because he's thinking, yeah. I know that $1 million sounds like a lot.
It's going to take a minute.
But if Beyond Alan that. Was the kind of person who could raise $1 million, then he probably would raise a bunch more. And then, yeah. Hey.
It's all me.
Yeah, we're going to the track. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yep. That's why I like you, Dave, even though you're gay.
Forward thinker.
Yep. After party?
Yeah, quick one. We can do that.
All right, good. Guys, thank you so much for watching another episode of It's Too Late, and we will see you next week. We gotta start remembering to tell people that the after party is only on Twitch.
Oh yeah, that's
twitch.tv/AlanMosleyTV.
Yeah. Twitch is fun. It's fast. Yeah,
we also need like 62 more subscribers to hit our goal.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Not it's kind of weird that we have as many as we have right now, to be honest.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
People hate commercials.
So many of the people whose names are on the screen, we're going to see them.
Yes.
In like 58 days. And I'm not going to call any.